This is Nadine Terrio-Copeland from the TransX Transmission Art Symposium in Toronto. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, I guess so. I don't know about that.
We have 18 known listeners. Sometimes it's more than that.
Ellen, I just got word from the ratings group that we are the number one rated show on this station.
Who said?
Well, I kind of made that up.
We are the number one. You mean we get more listeners than anyone else?
Yeah, that's all it could mean, right?
Well, they're driving around in their cars.
That's why it's good to be on the drive
going
time
to work,
slot. Yeah.
Coming home.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to WGXC in the morning. I listen to Democracy Now.
Yeah.
And then I listen to Lincoln Mayorga.
Oh, yeah.
And then I just, you know, when I'm in the car, like you said, yeah. I just flip the channels now and then, and it's amazing, you know.
Yeah. It is. And keep us going here, folks. You know, we're making a new kind of constant request that you become sustaining members, because it makes it a lot, or supporting members. It makes it a lot easier, and we'll take the pressure off all these pledge drives we have to do. So if you can, yeah, as low as I, you know, I went on the site, Ellen, because I'm going to, instead of giving each pledge drive, I'm going to do like you're doing, give monthly.
Well, you know, it's kind of painless.
It's totally painless.
It works through your credit card.
Right.
You have a chance at any time to change the amount you're giving every month, I believe.
Right. And it's as low as $5 a month. I mean, who can't afford that these days? It's a
Some
cup of coffee
can't.
If you go to these fancy coffee places.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of June Walker. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Give me liberty, or give me death.
WGXC, the station that gives you liberty.
Hello, radio listeners. Welcome back to the Medical Freedom Show. This is your host, Heather L. Martin. Today I am talking with Dr. Honnelly, the founder of the Energetic Health Institute and author of Energetic Health Volume 1. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Honnelly.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Heather. I really appreciate it.
Just very briefly, I'm curious about energetic health and a little bit about your background. Can you explain to us a little bit about what that is, or maybe what your book is about?
Absolutely. I'd love to. So I'm sitting in class in medical school, you know, and I had an epiphany. You know, we're going through a textbook of pathology, and it's like one of these, like the binder's like 3 inches thick of every possible thing that could go wrong. And, you know, it's creating just a total class of hypochondriacs, because you're like, oh my God, I have that, I have that, I have that. And, you know, I'm looking through all of these symptoms, and the one symptom that every single pathology has is fatigue. So as luck would have it, my very next class was in biochemistry, and we were getting into the cell, and we were getting into mitochondria and the production of ATP. And I have a huge background, big fan of Chinese medicine and Ayurveda and prana and qi, and seeing how all these things are the same. So I thought to myself, I wonder what would happen if we just gave the body everything it needs to produce energy. And sure as shooting, using that philosophy, I've had tremendous success clinically, tremendous success with my students who are using the same methodologies of saying, let's focus on energy production. If we get energy producing in the body is designed to heal. And it's such an incredible, incredible thing. So that's really the foundation of what energetic health is about, the production of energy. But we don't just limit it to nutrients and B vitamins and this food or that food. It's also about our lifestyle habits. It's also about our internal dialogue and what we think and what we say. They all come together to help maximize the production of energy.
Very interesting. Makes me want to check out your book. So I know you were drawn to my show today because of the vaccine topic. And you were talking a little bit before we went on about your research into vaccines. Can you tell us a little bit about that? You mentioned the evidence-based research, and I'd like to talk about that more here on the show.
Well, one of my colleagues, Brittany Cara, has a saying, the truth is hiding in plain sight. And we found that to be true. You know, when we go to the CDC's website, and we go to and we look up the vaccine media and excipient summary, it's a very important document for your audience to be aware of. The vaccine media and excipient summary, it has a list of all the ingredients that are actually in vaccines. And I want to be very clear with the audience. I do my best to not be pro or anti anything. I do my best just to be an educator.
Same here.
Right. And so, and you know, sometimes we get slung with arrows, you know, for being the messenger, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, but when I look at these ingredients, my first question becomes, can we do better?
Yeah.
Can we do better than having formaldehyde?
Mm-hmm.
Can we do better than having aluminum? Can we do better than thimerosal being able to be added after production without being listed on the label? This is on the FDA's site. Can we do better than the MRC5 aborted human fetal cell? Can we do better than the WI38 diploid? You know, can we do better than these ingredients? You know?
Exactly. That's what I always think too. And what you're saying right now resonates with me so much, because I feel that the greatest tragedy in all this is that science is being withheld. It's not that we're really using science and applying science in the way that we should be. And the world of science is just full of so much ego tripping and politicking that it's so far from actual science. Like, one of the things I'd like to see in a medically free world is for those peer-reviewed medical journals to be more available. Because my third grade science teacher would rip apart some of these experiments that are being published because they're not really following the scientific method.
Agreed. Totally agreed. I think when you look at the entire situation of how things are being tested, we know definitively that there have been zero double blind placebo tests for these. So we have no gold standard for comparison. We know that in many cases, and my concern with this new COVID vaccine that's being fast-tracked, it's not even going through animal studies. It's going directly to human volunteers, which is very similar to the Tuskegee experiment. This is one of my problems. Yeah. Where do we test these? We test these in third world countries most often on children, you know,
and have the resources to deal with a lifetime of disability that might result.
Let alone the breach of informed consent that goes on, you know, with it. And I think what we are seeing is an awakening in people right now that I'm personally really excited about. You know, it's like, why can't we ask a question? You know, one of the fundamental things about science is it's never settled because there's always more to learn. You can't settle something when there's more to learn about it.
Right. So that's why I think the culture of science really needs to change, because right now you have older scientists who want to protect their viewpoints and their theories and don't want anything to intrude upon this, because now it's becomes a crisis of ego.
Yes.
When I think maybe we need to celebrate scientists who are the most open to change and the most open to changing their minds based on new data. That should be really what's celebrated, because that's what's truly scientific.
One of my favorite scientists, George Washington Carver, right? Mm-hmm. The peanut, right? Peanut guy, right?
Yeah.
He had an axiom that went, I reserve the right to change my mind in the presence of new information.
Yeah.
But opinions are not information. Facts are information. And when I get into this topic with folks, I ask people to listen very intently for a key phrase, because this will tell you whether a person is talking scientifically or whether a person is talking from a faith-based model. And I'm a fan of both. I am actually an ordained minister as well. All right. I'm a big fan of both, but I'm a big fan of there being a clear distinction, because faith doesn't require any objective proof for it to be believed in. And that's the key word. So when you hear, when you see the World Health Organization saying, making their slogan, in vaccines we trust, which that is a belief statement. That's a faith statement. That's not a scientific statement. A scientific statement is the data says this. You know, a faith-based statement always leads with the same phrase, I believe. And whenever you hear a doctor, whenever you hear a person who purports themselves to be a scientist leading with the statement, I believe, whatever follows it is not science. It's faith-based, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it's not science just because it's coming from a scientific entity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Hear that a lot now in the medical community to the opioids and the pain medicine. They say, I'm mm-hmm. not comfortable with, or I don't believe in mm-hmm. this much medicine. Well, maybe they should listen to the people who've worked with it for decades for their chronic health condition. Anyway, getting a little sidetracked there.
Yeah, for sure.
But there's something I want to kind of go back to a little bit. When you were talking about the energetic health, you were talking about nutrition, and mm-hmm. that's something that really astounds me, of how little knowledge of nutrition there is mm-hmm. in the medical world, in the mainstream mm-hmm. medical world. Like, most doctors really don't have a very good understanding of basic nutrition. Mm-hmm. And also, like, when you go to a hospital, say if you're in a hospital, you know, everything is processed food that they're giving, mm-hmm. everything is commercial and full of preservatives and artificial colors and all these things that we already know are unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see it in just the food that is given to patients in the hospital, of where they're coming from. It's very corporately driven, and you've got all of these chemicals. And like, when you're talking about the vaccines, you know, that's exactly my thought on it. It's like, let's give this research over to the people who are developing the health food and mm-hmm. who understand, you know, plant-based equivalents and nutrition, and mm-hmm. we could really do so much better. We could have much safer, more effective vaccines. And because of the lack of medical freedom, because vaccines are pushed through a system of mandates, they don't get the research and development that such a technology would require, that it deserves, mm-hmm. and certainly not the follow through. There's absolutely no follow through. People are just vaccinated en masse, and then any negative reaction is anecdotal evidence.
Right. And I think there's a couple things in there. First thing is, when we talk about doctors, and we're talking about allopaths, medical
right.
doctors, not naturopathic doctors. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is, there was a study from 2009 by the National Academy of Sciences, and this is available on PubMed. They asked for every school, every medical school, to give a minimum of 25 hours. And we're talking out of about a 6,000-hour education. All they were asking was 25 hours on nutrition for every physician. Less than 20% of the schools that responded met that minimal requirement. So what you have to understand, and your audience has to understand about an MD, is it's not that they're ill-intended. They're
right.
just not educated. They're undereducated. For comparison, I run a holistic nutrition program that's been approved by the Holistic nutrition credentialing board so that my graduates are eligible to become board certified in holistic nutrition. And that they have over 1,000 hours of training to get to that point. Most MDs don't even have 25 hours of training in nutrition. So they're not qualified, unfortunately, and I think this is a big error on our part, but they're not qualified to speak intelligently, scientifically, evidence-based on nutrition. And unfortunately, we're seeing that in 2020 in full view, because the two greatest risk factors for fatality with COVID from COVID-19 is advanced age, but not just advanced age. It's advanced age with a comorbidity. And when you understand the human body, you understand that a comorbidity is by definition a nutrient deficiency. And if we, and what my biggest thing, I've been talking to medical directors at health departments, I've been, you know, messaging and emailing elected officials, I've been shouting from the rooftops since March, social distancing, fine, masks, whatever you feel on it, if you want to wear one, wear one. I'm not going to challenge somebody's first amendments, right?
Here, but in New York, it's mandated.
Another mandate. But my
I was wearing mine before the mandate. I think the mandate's a little excessive, but
right.
Nothing wrong with stores requiring masks for people to come in. They require shoes, they require shirts.
I don't have any problem with any of that. I'm medically exempt because if I wear a mask, I could go hypoxic and go into
my vaccine. And the stores really do need to make a way for people with certain conditions or certain disabilities. I went through that during this pandemic, trying to find certain supplies for people in my family who couldn't go out and go to the stores. And the stores are just telling me, well, wait here for 3 hours in the store, right? And maybe the order, like, you know, come on, you're telling me to sit in the store for 3 hours?
that's the worst thing. That's the worst decision.
Right. Yeah. And instead the policies are causing people to have to go in the stores more. So,
what if we told people, here's some good guidance for wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. And here's some good guidance for nourishing your immune system as well.
Yeah.
That's been my move. I'm like, look, whatever you want to do and whatever you got to do, I understand. And I'm all about it. I have no judgment. I refuse to be PC shamed, and I refuse to PC shame anyone. Mm-hmm. Right. We're all in this together. Right. So if we're all in this together, why aren't we giving Americans information that we know works? I keep sending this reference out from Linus Pauling Institute, which is our premier nutritional research center in the country. They have a study. They have a paper that they authored on the immune system, specifically how nutrition interacts with the immune system. Over 267 peer-reviewed, evidence-based references to it. It's as solid a work on the immune system and nutrition as I've ever seen. And I share this with politicians. I share this with heads of the different health departments. And crickets. And I'm like, why can't this be right alongside your recommendations for masks and social distancing? Because my suspicion is that if we taught Americans that all you needed to take was, and I'm not saying this cures anything. I want to be very clear, everybody. Okay. I'm not saying it's cure. I'm talking about empowering your immune system. Okay. Very different things. And a very important distinction for me legally. But what if we asked Americans to take 1,000 IUs of vitamin D, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, and 25 milligrams of zinc a day? We have studies from around the world that show the efficacy of it. But what if we did that? What would our numbers look like? You know, that's, and we may not know, but what if, right? We can.
And it's so accessible too.
So accessible and so inexpensive.
Yeah. I know, it just boggles my mind what things are done that are totally ineffectual and what things that are just so simple and could be so widely effectual are just you know, not being done, like making sure that like stores prioritizing pre-orders instead of walking into the store.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's backwards. They prioritize the people walking in the store over the people who will take the time and put the money up front and place the order ahead of time for something that they really need. And that just doesn't really make much sense to me unless the end game is mass depopulation or something along those lines, which are a lot of our so-called elite are obsessed with, which I think is also a lack of science, because if anything, science shows us that there is so much abundance and so much more abundance to be had.
Yeah, I agree. And without naming any names, I think we all know the players that we're talking about with that, and they've outed themselves enough, you know, to at least bring up reasonable suspicion of true intention. And I think when we get into some of this, it's like what we don't have to make dramatic changes. We just have to reconnect with some things that we've forgotten that were actually very important. Like, here's an idea: community gardens and having your own garden if you have some land, using your front yard instead of it being a lawn, it being something that produces food. Because that's what's so incredible about all the microorganisms and the fungal networks and the mycorrhiza that are in the soil, is that Mother Earth is ready to provide at all times. I mean, the magic is, I mean, think about this. You put a little seed in some dirt, and what do you need? A touch of water, and the magic explodes. And guess, here's a little thing for your audience. Guess how that seed starts to grow? It's all due to mitochondria that have gone dormant. All it takes is a little water, boop, and then they start producing energy, and boom, we have growth. And that turns into food that helps us. It's a beautiful miracle that life is, you know? And all we have to do is learn to live in balance with it. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Even when you look at the landfills and a lot of the trash that's there, a lot of it is just really raw material ready to be repurposed, ready to build our world up. You know, that's actually value sitting there. Just haven't figured out the systems yet to implement that.
Right.
So, radio listeners, you are listening to the Medical Freedom Show with Heather Martin. And I'm talking today with Dr. Honnelly, the founder of the Energetic Health Institute and the author of Energetic Health, Volume 1, which I'm growing more intrigued by the minute about. So anyway, I also want to get back to the subject of how the COVID-19 vaccine right now is, they call it fast-tracked. And really, this is a very reckless way of developing a vaccine. You mentioned in the first segment that it hasn't even gone through animal trials. It's going directly to human trials. I myself am not a big fan of animal trials. For one thing, animals have very different systems than human beings. But the way it's being trialed right now is very concerning. I haven't really had the time to research it as much as I would like, but I have been seeing some articles and headlines about trials starting in Africa. And do you know anything more about the trials, Dr. Honnelly, like how they're going about this development?
From what me and some of my colleagues have been able to unearth, and that's another one of our problems, is that so much of this is shrouded in secrecy. You know, this should be probably the most transparent process ever undertaken.
Absolutely.
One of the things I educate my audience on, especially in a class I teach on vaccine education, is that the process that companies go through is to get FDA approval for release is very suspect. You know, there's very little oversight. The companies are allowed to police themselves, in effect, and there's no independent duplication of their findings so that, you can, it can be confirmed by an independent body. It's basically the company goes to the FDA, says, hey, here's what we found with our trials. What do you think? And the FDA can take that, that information and take it at face value or say, hey, you know what, this doesn't look good. We need you to go back and rerun this, you know, as
and
far as
just before the show, we were talking a little bit about, certain protections that the FDA has from liability.
Thank you for bringing that up. And it's not the FDA. The FDA is, you can't sue the government on,
right,
on things like that. Like that's just a non-starter.
Untouchable.
But I would love for your audience to go and investigate 42 USC 300AA-22. Let me say that again. 42 USC 300AA-22.
Okay, I wrote that down.
It's a provision in the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. How interesting that the act has the name injury in it, right? But so many people refuse to believe that people can be injured by this product. What that clause does, the dash 20, the 300AA-22 clause does, is it gives complete civil immunity to every vaccine manufacturer. You cannot sue. Let me take that back. You can sue. The maximum you can sue for is $1,000, and a judge is required to throw it out by law upon receiving it. So it's in effect, you cannot sue a vaccine manufacturer for any injuries your child or yourself, I don't want to say received, but you get the idea, were caused by the product. Now, there's a process to go through this. You have to go and first report to Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, which is a federal entity. You can look up vaers.gov. But you have to go to Veris, and there's criteria for reporting an adverse event, and there's hundreds of thousands of line items there. And here's the funny part about it, Heather. Guess how many doctors are aware that Veris even exists?
Probably not too many.
Under 1% of physicians are aware that Veris exists, let alone have been even mildly trained on how to identify a potential vaccine injury. Why? Because almost no medical professional has ever read a vaccine insert to know what the side effects are, the contraindications are, that if a baby is born premature or a family has a history of neurological issues, that it makes the child exempt in the actual document, because most people aren't given that vaccine insert prior to and given an opportunity to ask informed questions of their physician, or here's the crazy thing, of their pharmacist. That's one of the most ridiculous things to me, that a pharmacist can now administer a vaccine. A pharmacist can't administer any other medical treatment, but they can administer
a
vaccine.
They can't do any screening tests.
They can't do anything like that, but they
can. When I had a guest on my show several months back who is the mother of two children injured by vaccines, and she discovered after the injury that there was a mitochondrial condition in her family, and like had the children been screened, it would have counterindicated them being vaccinated, like they were more vulnerable to the vaccine. But children are vaccinated en masse without any screening done at all. So it's just left to the luck of the draw whether you're going to be injured or not.
It's definitely a roll of the dice, and we can do better than that. That's the point, is we can pre-screen children for known allergens, because there's a, in almost every insert there's a list of, hey, if your kid is allergic to these things, there could be, this heightens the possibility of an adverse event. We can screen for that. We can also do something that isn't done, Heather, and we talked about it previously too, and I was so happy to hear you say this. After a vaccine is administered, number one, you should only get one vaccination at a time, period. That's, every vaccination is an infection. It's an artificial infection.
every veterinarian that I've ever taken an animal to very firm about that. They don't want to vaccinate too young. That's a big no-no. You don't want to vaccinate any animal that's too young. You want to space them out only one at a time, only a killed virus vaccine. You might think you need more vaccines than you do. They'll talk you out of them or see what your situation is, what you might actually need to protect your animal. But then you go to a pediatrician and they're like, how many can we do today? You know?
Let's get them all in. And what's always the rationale with that? Well, we want to make sure to get them in, and we don't want this to be traumatic on the child. They don't tell you about the money that they receive when they have a certain percentage of their patient population approved. I mean, you know, proven as vaccinated. They don't tell you about that. They don't tell you that that's weighing in to their decision making at all, which is unethical. It's actually a violation of their medical code of ethics. And yes, all physicians are required to honor medical codes of ethics, and you can file a medical complaint when your physician does not to their board. It's something I've been teaching more and more moms to do, is when you are getting bullied, when you are getting intimidated, when that doctor is telling you, if you don't do this, your kid is going to die. That is a bold-faced bullying tactic.
Well, and moms need so much support like
that. Oh, my goodness. So much. So we empower in this course, we empower moms to learn how to report to a board. And be like, look, all you're doing is making sure there's checks and balances. Yeah, go ahead.
How would they find that resource?
You know, the easiest thing to do is once your doctor, whatever state you're in, every doctor is licensed by their state. So what you do is you go and you look for the board for medical physicians or medical doctors, and then that'll pull it up for your state. And right on every single board is a link for so that you can file a complaint against that doctor if that doctor was attempting to bully you.
But how can a mother who's trying to protect their child get, like you're saying, like an advocate, someone who has actually helped them with support?
You know, there are a lot of groups out there. I would encourage folks to check out some of the work that Brittany Cara is doing with Matrix Mothers as an organization that is helping to be supportive of moms going through this process, knowing what a mom's rights are, knowing what a mom's can do and can decline. Listen, there's nothing wrong with a parent, mom or a dad, saying, you know what, thank you for the information.
Right.
I'm going to go home and talk about it and get a second opinion. We do this with everything. Mm-hmm. Talk with my family about it. And if we decide to move forward, we'll come back and we'll set up a schedule with you that's going to work. There's nothing wrong with that. That's how medicine, the relationship between a parent and a doctor is supposed to be a partnership. A right. partnership where the parent is at the head of the organization.
Exactly. And that's what I keep saying with medical freedom, is that there's such an imbalance in that, you know, a doctor and the patient should really be equal.
Totally. 100%.
Totally equal. And what's happening is the patients here and the doctors, well, I have medical training, I have all this authority, I have all this expertise, boom, you know, you're
right,
gone.
Right. And you've even had the stories of a doctor threatening, if you don't do this, your kid's going to die. Well, I'm going to hold off on it for a second. Well, if you don't do this, I'm going to report you to Child Protective Services.
Right.
Right.
And in the case of chronic pain patients, a lot of you take these epidural steroid injections or I won't give you pain medicine.
Right.
I have seen that kind of manipulation all the time.
Right. And it's just that right there. See, to your audience, you have the right to agree to or refuse any medical treatment. And guess where this comes from?
But if you refuse, you're still out the pain medicine and you're still in chronic agony, because you don't have the right to just go to the drugstore like you could 100 years ago and say, I want Pepivere somnifernum sap and get what you need.
Right. So, and this is that little loophole that they work within. I'll give you this. I'll give you what you want, but you're going to do what I want. And that's conditional thinking.
All the time.
And that's actually medically unethical.
And it's bullying. And I do believe that there is an untold amount of PTSD and trauma.
Yeah, oh God, yeah.
Happening to medical patients.
Yeah.
Like, I saw my partner told, well, if you want pain relief, get cancer by a doctor.
That should be, that doctor should be brought before their board for making a statement like that. If you don't do this, your kid is going to die. That doctor should be brought before their medical board and at least sanctioned on the standpoint of you have to, are going to have to take some coursework on bedside manners. Mm-hmm. And if we see you in here again for the same thing, we're going to threaten more extreme action against your license. You see, you got, unfortunately, we live in a world, in a country where you have to hit people in the wallet to get them to want to change, you know? And in the meantime, there are good people suffering. And the way, you know, for me, when I, and I've heard thousands of these stories of moms, of patients going in, getting really anxious. It's a very known medical condition that the heart will start racing and people will have a sympathetic fight or flight response upon the thought of going into a medical office, let alone sitting in the waiting room. Most nurses know I can't take your blood pressure until we have a little bit of a conversation because the likelihood I'm going to get a false high reading goes way up. People are stressed out going in to see the doctor. We're anticipating bad news, right?
We don't have medical freedom.
And we don't feel exactly. We don't feel like we're in charge of the decision making. The doctor's job is to inform and give the best series of options that they think are going to really help the situation. That's our job. Yeah. It's the patient's job to decide which of those and how they want to proceed. Now, a doctor might come back and say, well, okay, well, if with that in mind, I can't feel good about the treatment, I need to refer you to someone else. That's totally fair.
Right.
But we have to make sure what we're doing in medicine is get back into a,
you know, that's
a partnership
model. A good point too. The referral system is so broken. And I see no excuse for this because here we are, it's 2020. We have technology, we've had the internet for decades. Case in point, my partner, who was searching for over 10 years for a willing surgeon to do a back surgery, you know, all this time the surgeon was out there, but just because he goes to one doctor, he's locked in with that doctor. That doctor doesn't have anyone in their referral network who can do anything.
Right.
You know, there it stops. And you have so many people to being told that they're inoperable, untreatable, just because the doctor talking to them doesn't have the expertise and doesn't have someone in their referral network. I think there should be some kind of website where patients who have a supposedly untreatable condition can be listed, that it can be searched by doctors from anywhere in the world. So like if there's a doctor in Cambodia who just had a breakthrough about that particular condition and is trying to find these rare patients to help, they can go on there and find that patient. It really, we are not utilizing the resources that we have.
Well, and we see that in when we have situations where entities want to control, you know, what you can and cannot do. See, and I think that's what I love about what you're doing. This is, we're talking about medical freedom. And medical freedom doesn't mean that, you know, on a topic like vaccines, that you're pro or you're anti-vaccine. Right. What it says is that, no, just you have the right to decide. And if you're the guardian for that person, you have the right to decide, which means very simply, because this is the thing about freedom that's so exciting. It means that you accept the risk of being free.
Yeah.
Right? It means that, yes, I understand that because I'm free, I may respectfully and politely decline the vaccine, but that in doing so, if the vaccine is as effective as they say it is, and if it was, they wouldn't need to mandate it, wink, right? But if it was as safe and effective as they say it is, okay, that me not getting it is only a danger to myself. You know, the argument that a person who's unvaccinated poses a threat to a person who's vaccinated is preposterous, but that's because they've influenced the narrative for most people to equate vaccination with a cure. And that's not what a vaccine is. Your right. immune system is the cure. Mm-hmm. The vaccine is simply an artificial infection delivery system, an AIDS. Get that? It's an artificial infection delivery system so that when your immune system comes in contact with that artificial infection and all the toxic chemicals currently that are go along with it, mm-hmm. your immune system will mount a natural adaptive response to
right.
it and create antibodies and have T cell response, the very same thing we're seeing with COVID without any vaccine happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have immunity from it. That's how it works.
One thing that seems to really go against the whole theory that's being pushed about the herd immunity, that everybody has to be vaccinated in order for an individual's vaccine to work, is, well, what about the rabies vaccine?
Right.
Actually, that seems to be a pretty effective vaccine, at least for animals.
Mm-hmm.
And you vaccinate, say, your dog.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else in your home mm-hmm. is vaccinated for rabies,
mm-hmm.
but your dog is. That's not affecting your dog's protection. Now, your dog goes out into the woods,
mm-hmm.
and it might encounter an animal that's infected or not. Any animal it's going to encounter in the wild is not going to be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, if everything's going well for your dog, their vaccine is providing them protection in case they are exposed. Mm-hmm. And that's really how a vaccine should work. I think we should use the rabies vaccine as the model for success.
I'm with you on that, and provided that the additional adjuvants in it are clean, green, and non-toxic. That's my only side issue as a
right.
as an environmental doctor,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a lot of environmental medicine training is, and that which takes us back to that first point about ingredients. We can do better than this.
Yeah.
We can make sure the ingredients are non-toxic. And guess what happens when we do that? The mm-hmm. adverse events drop off a cliff.
Right. And
now you don't have to mandate anything because people will want it. People will be like, yeah, I want that. You know, it's not rocket science here. You know what I mean? It's not rocket science that we've seen a dramatic
increase. It's not a hard sell.
Right.
It's not a hard sell to think you just get a little jab and you get immunity from a horrible, deadly
right.
disease. I mean, that's
especially
sell
Heather.
Itself.
Right. Especially Heather, if they say, okay, we just gave you this artificial infection. Now here's the nutrition that we need you to take for the next 14 days to mm-hmm. make sure your immune system is powered up and goes into natural adaptive immunity very thoroughly, very quickly. And now guess what? You're good to go. You're good to go. It's the easiest sell in the world, but it's the impossible sell is when you mandate, because now you're telling people what to do, and Americans don't like that. And
it's not a cash cow.
Right. And exactly. And
yeah.
the impossible sell is saying, hey, I am going to tell you what you have to put into your baby. I'm going to tell you what you have to put into your body. It's like, well hold on.
Right.
Wait a minute. This is sovereign territory right here. You know what I mean? I decide what goes into it. I decide, you know.
But when you have that dialogue as equals.
Right, right.
There's not the resistance.
Right, it's just,
and it's
well.
Just, you know, I really see, like, we need a power shift.
We totally do. And I've been educating my audience this whole year on a simple idea.
Well, I just have to jump in. Hello, radio listeners, you're listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM. You are listening to the Medical Freedom Show with your host, Heather L. Martin. Today, I am speaking with Dr. Honnelly, founder of the Energetic Health Institute and author of Energetic Health, Volume 1. We have been talking about Dr. Honnelly's research and background in nutrition, in energetic health, and all those life-sustaining forces that keep us going, and also about our current allopathic medical system that is currently engaged in the fast track of the COVID-19 vaccine.
So, you know, when we talk about that particular vaccine, Heather, you know, there's enough about it for everyone to be very concerned.
Yeah.
You know, I have no intention of becoming Tuskegee Experiment 2.0, Tuskegee Experiment 2020. No, thank you. I am not going to be mandated into it. I am not going to allow my child to be mandated into it. And I am not going to expect other people to have their children mandated into it in order for my son to be safe. My son is safe based upon the healthy habits that we employ nutritionally and otherwise in our home. You know what I mean? And this is that inherent risk that you take with freedom. That, yeah, something bad could happen, but that's true of every minute of our waking life. That's how it works. I didn't want to cut you off. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I wasn't about to say anything.
Oh, okay. Oh, I can keep going. So, you know, I think that what's so important for us is to understand that fear makes fools rush in. If fear turns us into fools and it makes us rush in. And so I've been telling my audience all year, I was doing a PSA every day through the end of May on COVID-19. I go and I look at every single state health department and I give Americans the data that isn't being reported on the mainstream media. If you're going to report a fatality, report a recovery. So to give us the numbers. If you're going to report a positive test, report the total number of tests. You know, give us a full view of the situation, because I'm not here to be influenced. I'm here to be informed. And there's a difference. And media has moved into this influencing role of, let me tell you what you need to know. Let me tell you how you're supposed to feel about this. Let me tell you what to think about this. Mm-hmm. And I just, it's repugnant to me, because they're supposed to be the unofficial fourth branch of our government and checks and balances. But, you know, when you look at their advertising and who advertises them, you know why. They're not.
Anymore. Right.
Right.
They're pushing their war on drugs to continue since they legalized cannabis. They need a new drug to go after to continue having property seizures and driving that revenue for the prison industry.
Right. It's, oh, well, that's
you know, and one of the things right now, you know, they're talking about defunding the police. And I keep talking about, you know, well, if you end the drug war, you're already majorly defunding the police right there. Mm-hmm. Because that's the big cash cow. That's where they're getting the revenues from, property seizures and cars and houses and boats and all these things that are big money items. And that gets generated back into that community's law enforcement system. So, you know, are you looking at the little line on the county, state, or city budget? Or are you looking at really how police are funded? Because people don't seem to understand really how they are funded.
Yeah, the defund the police is a clever slogan that has just tremendous implications, you know, with it on both sides of the argument. And I think what we're all agreement on, which is very interesting that we're not talking about what we're all agreement on, accountability for bad police,
right?
That's all we're interested in. It's like, listen, let's just make sure that we are majorly that there is an accountability system and that they can't hide behind a blue line that punishes people for whistleblowing in that same community.
Absolutely. And I'd also like to see that extended to the judges. Like, these judges should be audited who are giving harsher sentences to one demographic than they are to another. I mean, that should 100%. There should be a record of that. That should be provable.
Yeah, well, it is provable. It's just, what do you do it? See, and this is the whole thing that's so interesting about our sense, because we're talking about freedom, right? Mm-hmm. Freedom means we live in a democratic society. Well, the foundation of democracy is checks and balances. And what do we see? Every time there is no oversight, every time there is no checks and balances, corruption erupts, right? And that's what we're seeing. We see it in the vaccine industry. There's no, the checks and balances, this is what I want your audience to understand. Checks and balances for citizens against companies and the products that they create is civil litigation. You look up car seat manufacturers, and when they've had a defect in their product, they've paid out millions of dollars to one family for a defect. Could you imagine what would happen to the pharmaceutical industry if they were held civilly liable for vaccine injuries? It would bring the industry to its knees, which then does something very incredible, because the industry wants to continue. it forces the industry to change.
Mm-hmm.
It forces the industry to be better, to put out a better product, a product that is truly safer. And we can put in mechanisms like we were talking about before we went on the air, about after you've had the vaccination, that 2 weeks later we check for antibodies to see and make sure that the vaccine
and
produced antibodies.
Did you have any weird reaction of you've not been able to sleep for 2 weeks? You know, what's going on with you? And you know, when we were talking before about the pediatricians and how they are in such a rush to get the most vaccines into the youngest child possible, it really seems to be, you know, get the most vaccines into someone who is pre-verbal so they cannot describe their symptoms and they can't point a finger.
And before their immune system can effectively get into natural adaptive immunity. Most people don't know this. Immunologists know this, but most people don't. That the baby's immune system does not gain full immunocompetency until typically around 24 months. Any vaccines administered prior to 2 years of age are, forgive me for saying this, a money grab. They're not based upon science. They're not based upon our understanding. If you inject a newborn baby, Hep B vaccine, right? Baby just came out the womb. Hep B, this is what actually got me started, Heather, on researching this, because my son was, you know, and I was like, I want to be prepared to answer this question. Should I vaccinate him or not? You know, I started doing all this research on the Hep B vaccine, and I was just like, wow, why are we giving this to children, first of all? And why are we giving it to children literally seconds after they've come out of the womb? Is the situation that dire?
Yeah.
You know, we're giving them an artificial infection, and that's all I know we say vaccines. I'm just going to continue to call them artificial infections. Mm-hmm. I want the world to realize what they're not a cure. All they are is an artificial. So are we going to really give a brand new baby, the umbilical cord just got cut, we're going to give that baby an artificial infection as it's hello into the world, and it doesn't even have an immune system that can handle that. So we now put that baby in a challenged situation. The opportunity for an adverse event skyrockets. Don't get me started on SIDS, you know, and them saying that there's no connection. I'm not stupid. I know you want me to be, but I'm not. And what I want folks to understand is, if that baby isn't nursing, isn't being it's mama's milk that's the vaccine. That's the best vaccine that baby can ever get.
I wanted to bring up too is that there's the immunity that is passed from mother to child, both through the gestation process and through nursing. And wouldn't it be wise to first titer a child and see what natural immunities it already has? And also, wouldn't it be a goal, or at least an ideal goal, that your vaccine might be transferable intergenerationally?
And listen to this woman.
Trying to see if that's happening.
Listen to this woman. This is, and how do we get to these places? Because we're asking questions, right? This is the thing. I've lost some friends during this COVID-19, not because they passed away or were sick, just because they can't stand what I'm saying. Basically about it. And it's like, I'm not saying anything. I'm just asking questions. You know, if we can't ask questions and get a good answer for those questions, we're not living in a free society. You know, to me, that's the fundamental thing. If you're asking questions, it means you're thinking. It means there's a critical process going on in your mind. And it's so beautiful and it's so wonderful. Because it's those critical processes that make our world a better place. We don't think, at one point in time, we thought that it was okay for expecting moms to smoke. That was a medically established, this is an okay thing to do. But
even
now,
kind of recommended.
Right, but now, be cool here. You know, look at that great little, and look at, she's checking out the new sofa that she's going to buy. You know, and you're looking at it, and you're going, I am repulsed that we thought at any point in time that that was okay. But how did we get to the place we are today because we used and applied critical thinking and asked mm-hmm. questions. Why are babies coming out still? Why are babies coming out blue and cyanotic? Why are babies coming out with developmental delays and errors of
why has autism increased 300%?
I want to know. It's a good question. And here's what people say. Well, that's been debunked. No, it hasn't. There was one study, the Finland study, one study. And guess who funded that study? A vaccine manufacturer funded that study. And the follow-up study to that was done by these exact same authors. And when you look for the funding statement on both of those papers, guess what? Who funded it? The same company that makes the vaccine. That completely is a conflict of interest and completely invalidates anything that they found there, let alone that guess what wasn't a measurable criteria during that study? Autism. Because autism hadn't yet been clearly clinically defined globally. So it wasn't even an option for someone on a follow-up surveillance mm-hmm. to check and say that happened. So what they're doing is completely misleading in that study.
Always important to look at who are the funding sources behind
any study. That's the first thing
study,
I look at.
Any publication, you know, even going back to when we start out talking about how allopathic doctors are educated, even mm-hmm. when they're in college, you know, how are those textbooks produced? You'll find a lot of pharmaceutical industry money behind them.
A person who asks questions is a patriot. That's what being patriotic is, asking
questions.
Consider myself
patriotic mm-hmm. to my mm-hmm. land and countrymen.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you were talking a bit, I wanted to give you a chance to share your knowledge with our audience a little bit about how one can protect oneself from COVID right now, in addition to the masks and the hand washing and the sanitizer.
Well, I appreciate that. Let me qualify this statement by, of course, saying, make sure if you do have symptoms, that you either go in and get tested and then quarantine, or are hospitalized and follow the directions of the people that are working with you. All right. If you feel like you have symptoms and you're unsure, but they don't feel severe, make sure you do what we always do when we're sick: stay home. Right, have a little bit of some good old organic, you know, chicken soup with a whole bunch of good organic veggies in it, and do what we normally do, because the probability recovery, and we have looked at over 3 million positive cases, Heather. We've looked at the demographic data on this, something that's not being published widely. Mm-hmm. We've been following this since the first week of August. Let me share some stats with you. And we just had our first paper published by the Children's Health Defense, and we're having our second paper published by the Children's Health Defense tomorrow. We have a series of six papers scientific peer-reviewed papers that we're getting published right now. So we've looked at this very thoroughly, and we go down to the state health department level and we acquire all of this information. What we want folks to know is that probability of recovery in the 0 to 19 age demographic is 99.96%. I just finished a data update last night. There have been only 63 reported fatalities in the 0 to 19 age demographic nationwide, and that includes probable cases where we don't have lab confirmation on them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The probability of recovery in the 20 to 49 age demographic is 99.6%.
Actually, speaking of the hospitalization, and one of the protocols for some patients has been intubation.
Yes.
There's a doctor in my state, New York, who's got a few YouTube videos out. Mm-hmm. And what he's postulating is that the treatment protocol for the intubation is mm-hmm. setting the pressure on the respirator too high and actually damage people's lungs. And what's really astounding to me is I hear he's making YouTube videos about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think a doctor would have the authority to say, I don't think this is working, I'm going to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently they don't. It's like they have to follow a blanket protocol.
in March, the FDA was very clear to all licensed physicians that if you discuss any other treatment than the one that